What meat would you stick a fork in?
A sausage. Stick a fork in me, I'm done.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, see if the juices run clear.
Freaking Gordon Ramsay. <isn't it? laughs>
What are you? I'm an idiot sandwich.
And a World Cup for Japan! They have rewritten the history books in Germany.
And welcome, everybody, to The Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host, Adam.
That intro always leaves me wanting more.
Well, it's much like our podcast. Insufficient.
It feels like there's a third word there.
I know.
Is it like rude or something? And you cut
no,
it?
It's just bad commentary by whoever that guy is.
He's not Peter Drury, is he, mate?
He isn't. He's no Peter Drury. But most of the clips for women's football in the kind of 2000s is that bloke commentating.
Oh, really?
So I'm sure he's probably got a well-known name, but he's on pretty much every clip. Oh. But we're not here to talk about the commentary.
Sorry.
We're here to talk about the 2015 Women's
yes,
World Cup
are.
Final.
2015 Women's World Cup, as you've already said, was a bit of a... I think we always say that these World Cups are groundbreakers, but this one is like stratospheric in terms of what we know now the women's game became.
Mm-hmm.
This is very much a kind of bit of a takeoff.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Joshua knocked out Klitschko?
I do remember that.
And the commentary
well.
Was, take off for Joshua. Do you remember that? He knocked
no.
him out.
I don't remember the commentary.
Lift off for Joshua because he beat Klitschko.
Yeah, yeah.
That's this World Cup.
Amazing.
That commentary could be put over this World Cup.
And I think we know it's getting dropped in now.
This is great work from Joshua. What fitness, what heart from Klitschko. But the fight has been stopped. Lift off for AJ. A new chapter, a new era.
So, yeah, we need to kind of pay attention to this World Cup in a big way. So the tournament was hosted by Canada for the first time and by a North American country for the third time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a weird way of saying that. Don't you find it's weird when they say
North America?
It's two
yeah.
of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, so America then.
Canada, America's hat.
Yeah. So USA had hosted twice before, as we've covered, but this was the first time Canada, and they had a pretty good team. I don't know if you know anything about the Canadian team.
No, well, I know nowadays they're reigning Olympic champions.
Yeah.
They obviously didn't have a very good Women's World Cup for 2023,
no.
And the Canadian FA, both for men and women's, is an absolute shambles right now for money reasons.
So Canada, matches were played in six cities. This is crazy. Six cities across Canada in five different time zones.
I mean, to other people, that's probably quite obvious, but when you're in England...
So weird, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the idea that your country contains time zones
yeah.
is mind-numbing.
So it's not like what time's the game on, it's what time zone is the
yeah,
game
exactly.
in.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to go watch the Canada game? Yeah, sure. Is it a four-hour flight or a five? Brilliant.
Yeah, classic. So anyway, Canada hosted the 2015 tournament. It saw the World Cup expanded to 24 teams, so ever-growing tournament from that. First tournament that we covered in 91, up to 24 teams now. All previous Women's World Cup finalists qualified for the tournament for the first time.
Oh, cool.
Which is quite cool. I remember that when we were covering the men's tournament, that took like 13 World
yeah.
Cups, for obviously not including the first few when there was only one winner. But yeah, all Women's World Cup finalists were there. So it was very much, and this kind of actually plays through, is very much a all the big guns coming together and all the big guns
proceeding.
Well, no one failed
mm-hmm.
Other than, you know, once they started knocking each other out. So it was a kind of a real elite tournament for that, separating the men from the boys in, oh, that's a bad way of saying that, isn't it?
The women from the
women
girls.
From the girls, yeah. It was also the first World Cup for either men or women to be played, this is controversial, on artificial turf.
Now that you've said that yeah. does ring a bell.
It was
I do
a big
feel
thing.
Like that got spoken about loads. Yeah, that's a really good point.
So all matches were played yeah. on artificial grass.
I remember, because I think... Again, I might just be saying this now because you equate fully artificial grass with a lot of injuries, but
nope.
I feel like that this tournament became marred by injury after injury. And
I don't know I didn't read about that, but I did read that there was a massive legal challenge beforehand.
Right.
So their initial concern about a possible increased risk of injuries, artificial grass is known
yeah.
To cause
very
more
high
injury.
Impact.
A legal challenge suggesting matches should be played on grass, as in similar men's tournaments, was dropped 4 months before the tournament began.
Right.
But it got to the point of being in the courts
yeah,
and
sure.
all the rest of it. But in the end, I guess you know, Sepp Blatter wrote a check and everybody everybody went quietly. But yeah, it was a real thing. And it's such a weird thing, isn't it? Can you imagine? I vaguely remember England, didn't England play Argentina on a semi-artificial, Japanese Sapporo Dome?
That Beckham penalty game. Bells, yeah. And for a while, this was in the early technology. They did try and blend, which they do now, but it's so much further along than what it is back then. But yeah, back in the day, it really wasn't different from like the 4G that me and you would play on down at a local recce. No. And they've obviously found ways to actually integrate synthetic with real grass now, which majority of pitches are. But yeah, back then it was like, oh great, I'm running on concrete that has a layer of like plastic grass.
It's like what you and I would know as kind of the first generation of, I don't know if it's called 1G.
That's a good point, yeah.
Is it? The first generation of artificial grass, which is that rock hard, it's just green carpet.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Yeah, there wasn't any grass element to it, was
no.
it? It was just.
I remember Luton Town, we've just come back to the Premier League, they had an artificial pitch, showed a QPR. In the late 80s, this would have been.
Yeah.
And it was quite controversial.
Yeah, I bet.
Because they were the only teams that were doing it, but it was obviously like rock hard green carpet.
Yeah, think how much the ball bounces as well on one of them.
Yeah, and it was seen as a real advantage for those teams.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah, so yeah, a bit of a weird one, but yeah, that in the 2015 World Cup, that happened to the women.
Right,
that's 30 years after that controversy of top division
teams.
And
I get that, you know, Canada probably. Well, I'm trying to think. It would have been a summer tournament. Was it summer tournament?
Yeah,
it was the end of the year.
Yeah, summer.
So I was trying to think, obviously, of temperatures and to stop the pitch freezing. So I understand that maybe artificial grass is better for that. But
yeah, I mean, it kicked off a little bit. I think mainly because it, you know, the point being, and there's probably some truth in this, is it would never have been suggested for a men's tournament.
No.
So you know, fighting that fight as ever, as we've seen throughout, and I'm sure we'll continue to see. Well, we will continue to see. We're talking about Marriott's before we came on air.
On air,
and it's live.
All of the big teams, as I mentioned, they all made it through their group stages unscathed. So Canada, Norway, USA, Japan, Germany, all the big dogs. England, who were becoming a bit of a force by this point, not necessarily, you know, known as a regular finalist, but they were certainly...
There was a big uptake, wasn't there?
Well, they were recognised as a team people didn't want to play.
Yeah.
Names like Jill Scott, Lucy Bronze...
Farrah Williams.
People that we now either know playing or we know from watching their punditry, Alex
Scott.
And
also, is it it's been so long since we recorded, but the previous two World Cups, we beat the teams, or at least didn't lose to the teams that went on to win
We? Including that the German team that stuffed everybody, we got a 0-0 draw out of them. So, yeah, I think England were always probably an awkward team, but I think now they were like, yeah, we don't really want them, as we'll see, because they actually have a bit of a good run. Most significantly, the big teams made it through. One notable result, as we were mentioning England, was England's second round victory over Norway.
Oh, interesting.
Which was huge at the time. Sure. Norway, as we've talked about quite a few times, were a bit of a women's football powerhouse. England were able to beat them 2-1 in the second round, and then they went on to face Canada, obviously the hosts, and they beat them in the quarters.
That's a good run.
So those two kind of victories, and this would probably be the first Women's World Cup that I noticed.
Yeah.
I was just saying again before we started that I remember watching England's semi-final, or at least part of it. And before that, I just simply wouldn't have known it was happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, forgive my ignorance, but it ultimately reached some degree of mainstream that I came
public
across
knowledge,
it.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been in the papers and...
Yeah, exactly. Or they have a faithful BBC Sport website.
I forgot what year it was. I was about to go, you probably saw it on CFAX or Teletext, and then thought, wait a minute, it's 2015, really wasn't that long ago.
Do you remember CFAX's rival on ITV? Do you remember that was called?
I thought it was CFAX and Teletext.
Teletext, before Teletext?
Oh, no.
Oracle.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That is an intense name.
It was red and green. I love the fact that branding was a thing. Yeah, the colours of the text. CFAX was yellow and blue.
Oracle.
No, Teletext. Oh, I haven't got a bloody clue. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? Like, Oracle, that must have been like mid to late 80s. And you go on ITV, you use text, and it's Oracle.
Yeah.
And you go on BBC, and it's
I feel like the demographic of our podcast is probably fine, but is there a listener that has no idea what words we've just said? CFAX, Teletext. Do we have anyone in that
Jacob.
Kind of 27 and under, 28 and under
sickening
bracket that don't know?
When did CFAX stop? When was it? I remember them kind of announcing
it. Right.
You weren't using it.
Oh, no. Like, it was way behind. Like, the internet was
mid-90s, I would have thought.
I used to use it as a kid, so I think early 2000s. I think it was probably live till like 2010. I'm going to look at it now.
In fairness, CFAX was probably quicker than dial-up connection.
Yeah, that's good. And you didn't have to wait for your mum to get off the phone.
Yeah, I want to check the football scores.
This is incredible. Here we go. So CFAX was started by the BBC in 1974.
Go on.
Ended after 38 years of broadcasting in 2012. So it's not that far removed.
No way. Yeah, I mean, how many people were really still using it?
Oh, no, point? Yeah. At that point, it's...
I don't know how we've got to CFAX from the 2015 Women's World Cup, but we have. Anyway, we digress. Back we go. So I honestly can't remember how we got there, but England beat Norway, they beat Canada, and then they would go on to face Japan in the semi-finals. Japan defeated Australia, who again were a bit of a powerhouse, to make their way there. USA got one over on their longtime rivals, China.
Ah, interesting.
So like some big matches here in the quarterfinals. And then Germany beat France on penalties to make up the final four.
Oh, that's good.
So you had two times champions, Germany, and USA, two times champions, would contest one semi-final, while England had the chance to make the final against Japan, who had won in 2011 against all the odds, beating USA.
The reigning champs.
Yeah. So like crazy lineup, like real kind of like... You know,
Holyfield, Lewis, Tyson.
I was going to say Djokovic, Federer, Nadal and Murray in the semis, the big four, if there is such a thing. We're just kind of reminiscing a little bit because the way that England went out in the semifinals is the first memory I think I have of women's football, actually sitting down watching it.
Yeah.
I thought it was Steph Houghton, apologise to her. It was Laura Bassett, who scored a very, very late own goal to knock England out.
That's heartbreaking.
Against Japan.
Yeah, I didn't remember how England got knocked out of this tournament until you showed me the clip before we started recording. Yeah. And it is heartbreaking, but very Jamie Carragher-esque, where she's thrown her body at the ball, she's done everything right, and just literally the angle it hits the top of her foot, so cruel. It
bounces off the crossbar, not just over the line, it's clearly over the line. But I remember thinking, and I think it now, it was a very England thing to happen.
Well, in a way, it's comforting, isn't it, Al? It's your first, like, dipping a toe into the water of women's football, and you go, actually, I
wonder
know
if it's different. I wonder if it's different. Yeah. No, it's not.
Oh, yeah,
it's
I know this feeling. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ironically, I think I've said more recently that watching the Lionesses is so different to watching the England men's team.
Yeah.
Because they tend to deliver.
Yeah, yeah. They have so much potential, and they fulfil it.
And they fulfil it, yeah. As good as you think they are, turns out they are.
Yeah. Mary Earps looks really good. Oh, she is. She is. That's great, yeah.
Yeah, whereas Jordan Pickford...
let's get
well, in fairness, on. He looks shit and he is, so...
Yeah, well, yeah. He's got something in him.
Has he been dropped? Just
no,
digression.
Ramsdale played the second friendly, he played the first. But he's breathing down his neck.
He is,
ultimately, mind you. Let's not turn this into an England men's podcast, because I was about to talk about Harry Maguire and we don't want to go there.
No. Until Ramsdale goes out raving after England win, Pickford gets my...
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Anyway, right, on to the final itself then. So USA would join Japan in the final by beating Germany 2-0 to have a rematch of the 2011 final.
That's right, yeah.
And a rematch with some bite in it.
Yeah.
USA were a wounded animal.
And they don't take defeat well,
no,
Americans.
No,
at
they
all.
Don't. No.
They take it very personally.
And especially USA largely are considered one of the top teams, if not the top team of the last 15 years, probably the entirety of what we've covered.
Yeah,
here,
exactly.
Really.
Yeah,
they've always been there, haven't they?
Yeah, that we. I think we made, and I think it's a good mirror between the men's and women's game, but they are the Brazil. They're the World Cup team.
Yeah.
Like the
United
States are in the business of winning tournaments.
Yeah, they're going to show up because it's a major tournament. Sorry, just getting tangled up there. So we have a rematch of the 2011 final. Because of the expanded... So I got a little section here on the final before we get to the match.
Nice.
Because there's a bit of a build-up for this. Because of the expanded competition format, 24 teams instead of 16, it was the first time the finalists had played a seventh game in the tournament. Before this, there'd been no what we know as the second round,
Of
16 or whatever it might be. So this is the first time in Women's World Cup history they'd had to play and win this many games in the the month-long tournament that it was. So USA had previously reached the final three times, winning twice in 91 and in 99, placing runners-up, as we've mentioned, in the tournament before this, when Japan beat them. But this was Japan's second successive final appearance as their attempt... to be the first country to successfully defend the title since Germany. So they, all that really to stay. The stakes were high with this game. It was a revenge match. USA were gunning for them. It was kind of like, you know, Japan had seen them off. Japan were looking to defend the title, second team to do that. USA were looking to win it for the third time. So yeah, they were high for both sides. If United States had won the match, it would be the only country to have won in three women's World Cup finals, emulating Brazil's initial achievement in the men's game. If Japan won, instead, it would be the first team, men or women's, to win twice under the same coach.
Oh, that's an interesting one. That's good.
Men or women's since?
Beckenbauer?
No, you're getting confused with captain and manager. We did cover this.
Yeah. I can't think.
Pozzo.
Oh, yes.
Italian manager. Yes. Who led the men's team, Italy men's team, in 34 and 38. That's a long way back for us now. Yeah. But Norio Sasaki, the manager of Japan, was looking to emulate that. So again, kind of loads of stuff in the build-up, loads of stuff kind of like, you know, this would mean this, this would mean that. Ironically, not necessarily ironically, but almost fittingly, this would become known as the record-breaking final.
Ooh.
So many records got broken in this
That's
final,
tantalizing.
which we'll get into, yeah. But it was nuts. But as we lead into the match, both teams were undefeated throughout the tournament, with the United States only conceding one goal in the six matches that they played, leading up to the final, and Japan winning all of their matches in regular time.
Oh, that's good.
So good stuff. So ultimately, all that to say, this was probably the most hotly contested, eagerly anticipated Women's World Cup final to date. So into the match itself, the United States were looking to make a statement, and a lot of the build-up had been, this is going to be a real ding-dong, this is going to be like, you know, the unstoppable force against the immovable object. Some people were calling it earthquake versus tugboat, you know what I'm saying?
I love that we continue to alienate our listeners.
Just read up on it, you lazy kids. You got the internet. You don't even have to check it on CFAX. Just
you don't
look
even
up
have to tell your mum to get off the phone. You can do it as you're listening to this podcast.
Google tugboat. Anyway.
No, don't. Do not Google tugboat. Not if you're at work. Not if you're on public transport and people can see your phone. Who knows what's going to come up.
Oh, dear. So the United States kind of killed all that.
Oh, really?
With this sentence. They scored four goals in the first 16 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
So I was like, all this build-up, all this, you know, the stakes are high, this will mean this will mean that, what a chance, what an opportunity, first team to, you know, defend the title, win it three times, four goals, 16 minutes.
That is cold, isn't it? That is revenge served cold. I mean, that is brutal.
When you want to be known as one of the best teams, and then you do that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fair enough. Like, that's there.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice.
Right, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I guess in a way, it's why we have come to know the USA national team in Women's World Cup, as we've kind of educated ourselves throughout this last, you know, 8-9 years. They are the top dogs.
The team, yeah.
And this is the kind of history that points you towards that.
When it mattered most, when all the pressure was on up against a really informed team and they just battered them.
I mean, again, to repeat that fact, Japan had won all of their matches in regular time. They hadn't had a problem.
Yeah.
And then for 16 minutes. You imagine that feeling.
Ugh.
16 minutes into the World Cup final. Three of those goals were scored by midfielder Carly Lloyd.
Hero.
Quite an outspoken critic of the most recent USA
That's
team
right.
On her work on American TV. But she scored the fastest hat-trick in World Cup history.
Ooh, didn't know that.
So a hat-trick within 16 minutes. Three of the four goals were hers.
Wow.
Her first goal was the third minute, was the fastest in a Women's World Cup final, obviously. Driving home a corner kick from Megan Rapinoe.
Yep.
Did I say that right? Get out of time. Dominic Mattia.
Terry Henry. Not that you've ever said that, but.
Her goal also marked the first time Japan had trailed throughout the tournament.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, interesting.
So, so that's 1-0. Lloyd again then scored in the fifth minute. So, two goals in the first 5 minutes from a free kick from Lauren Holiday. Holiday herself then scored in the 14th minute in a way to kind of suggest the game is over. After Japan defender Azusa failed to clear the ball from a header and Holiday put the rebound away. And then Lloyd's hat-trick 2 minutes later in the 16th minute, which Reuters, quite a famous goal, which Reuters called one of the most remarkable goals ever witnessed in a Women's World Cup, was struck from the halfway line.
No way! In a World Cup final?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Catching the Japanese goalkeeper Kaluri out of position and stranded, basically.
It's a fantastic start by the USA. Lloyd with Morgan streaking. She's chipping the goalkeeper!
I mean, you know it's not your day when that's happening.
I mean, yeah.
Mentally, you're shot. You must be totally. So confused, so heartbroken.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, incredibly. I mean, credit to Japan, they didn't give up, which we'll cover a little bit in a second. You would think going 4-0 down in 16 minutes is like...
Well, I'm not, because I don't know the score. I think I was pretty sure that the US won, but I don't know the score. So part of me is kind of like hoping this isn't an embarrassment for Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's different ways to look at it, but I mean, you go 4-0 down in 16 minutes, it's quite embarrassing.
In a
World Cup final. But the stunning goal, going back to the Lloyd's hat-trick goal, the stunning goal was nominated for the FIFA Puskas Award.
Yes.
And it meant Lloyd became the first woman to score a hat-trick in a World Cup final and the first player, male or female, to do so since Jeff Hurst did so for England against West Germany in 66. Only one player has done it since. Who was that?
Kylian Mbappe.
Very good, Lewis.
Oh, yeah. That is forever burned in my mind. I watched it in the room we're recording with you.
That's right. What a night that was. Lloyd's hat-trick is the only one of the three to have been completed in regular time, however.
Oh, yeah. That's a good note.
Good little stat, that one. The men needed extra time.
That's right, yeah.
Lloyd didn't. Japan, as I said, to their credit, didn't give up. In the 27th minute, Ogami scored with a left-footed shot to give Japan the first goal. And then in the 52nd minute, an own goal off the head of Johnson from a Miami free kick. Saw it go back to 4-2.
Oh, here we go. Game on, second half comeback.
Interesting. Like, watching the highlights, element of like, oh, hang on, we're not out of this. Yeah. 52nd minute, only two down.
Regroup after halftime, try and get yourself back in the game.
But here's the killer, ruthlessness. 2 minutes later. I mean, it's what the great teams do, isn't it?
Right.
Like, you've been given a sniff, and I'm going to absolutely just remove that completely. 2 minutes later, USA midfielder Tobin Heath scored the final goal of the game from a pass from Morgan Brian for the United States to essentially put the game beyond a shadow of doubt, 5-2, and that is the way it stayed until the end. USA avenging their defeat from 4 years previous in dominant fashion and becoming the first women's team, as we mentioned, to win the World Cup three times and into extra time.
Well, you have just witnessed 90 of the most gripping minutes of European football you will ever, ever see. But the good news is there's more to come.
So as I mentioned, it was the final that broke records and ultimately raised the stakes. I think because it broke so many records, there were so many headlines.
Yeah,
sure. So it wasn't just the USA won.
Yeah.
It was just like, and this
highest
happened,
scoring,
and it meant this.
Final, yeah, it was hat-trick, halfway line goal.
And I think because of that, it garnered headlines all over the place. And because it's America, it garnered headlines, I think.
And it's great that the final lives up to its reputation.
Yeah.
Like, we've covered a lot of finals
in
this podcast, and a lot of them we've got. So the build-up's great. The run-up is
perfect.
How many
times we start a podcast with, so the game itself.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so refreshing. It's so enjoyable when a final actually lives up to
its
kind of billing.
Absolutely. So on top of all of Carly Lloyd's achievements, which we talked about, you know, fastest hat-trick, first hat-trick in regular time in a World Cup final, blah, 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 all those things that we just mentioned. The combined seven goals were the most in women's World Cup final history and tied the record for the most goals in any men's or women's World Cup final since Brazil defeated Sweden 5-2 in Pelé's first World Cup win in 58. Yuki Ogami's goal in the 27th minute ended a United States streak, this is crazy, at 540 minutes of not conceding a goal.
Wow.
Tying a World Cup record of Germany in 2007, 540 minutes.
It's not bad.
I mean, it's crazy that tied it.
Yeah, sure. You would have thought that would be by far and away the record.
What's the chance of that? So, another record there. Christy Rampone?
I don't know
Rampone. The only player remaining from the United States 1999 winning team.
Oh, wow. Longevity.
16 years later.
That's good.
She was then also...
She's like Jill Scott, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So she was the only player from that team. She was also the oldest player at 40 to play in a Women's World Cup. More records.
Yeah.
tumbling. It also marked the first time since 1999 the United States held the two major trophies in women's football, the Olympics and the World Cup. At that point, yeah. You know, I mean, obviously for USA, now probably the Euros come into it for European nations. Because, you know, from a Lioness point of view, Euros and World Cup, you know, because we don't play the Olympics. Of course, that's the top two, really, isn't it? I don't know if it's still like that in the women's game, where the Olympics is seen as equal.
Olympics is still a big deal in women's football.
I think because this country, we don't play in it, we don't necessarily connect to that.
Well, we have a Team GB now and again. I say now and again, we haven't had it for years, but we have had
I thought we just did that for London.
Was it just London, was it?
I don't. The men certainly haven't done
basically
it.
Basically, all I can picture is Ellen White in a Team GB top. Yeah. But that could have been easily 2012.
I know the men only did, they got special dispensation to do the London games, but the women might be different because it would be contractual, won't it? It'll be about their contracts to England and Scotland and Wales and blah, blah, blah. And the FAs couldn't come to an agreement. I know that was the thing.
Yeah.
Post-London, they looked at continuing it. But Craig Bellamy said he didn't want to do it, so.
Oh, Bellamy. He's got a mean golf swing on him.
I wonder where you were going there.
So did I.
Okay.
Allegedly.
So, yeah. And then the final two facts, one of them a record on US television. The 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup shattered viewing records for soccer in America, men or women. Which maybe not is a massive thing until I tell you the figure. The Fox Network reporting 25.4 million people watched the final. I know America's a big country, but that is an insane amount of people.
Yeah. Well, that's still, what, a tenth of their population? So 1 in 10 people were watching that game. Yeah. Well, that's not bad at all.
No, it's crazy. For a country sport that isn't a major sport, yeah.
Exactly.
So, and then with that, to kind of like frame the explosion that this World Cup kind of caused, certainly in America, on the 11th of July, the World Cup win, compare this with that 91... Do you remember the thing that after the first World Cup where I can't remember the woman's name that came back and she said, no one knew and no one cared, coming back to the airport after they won the first World Cup. So however many, 24 years later, the 11th of July, the World Cup win was celebrated with a ticker tape parade in New York City. It was the first time a team of female athletes had been honoured with a ticker tape parade in the Canyon of Heroes in Lower Manhattan.
No way. The first ever women's team.
Yeah.
Wow.
So no other of the, you know, more prominent women's sports had that kind of adulation, eyes of the country.
Wow.
But that team was the first one. So
Trailblazers.
Yeah, totally. Coming home to an empty airport 24 years before to a ticker tape parade in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
Not bad growth.
Well earned.
There we go.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely incredible report. Great final. Please do join us next week as we discuss the 2019 Women's World Cup final.